All right, well, I think we're going to aim to start right on time. So I'm pleased to introduce Carmen Jenny, who's talking on comparing Mixian orthographies. Is there hope for a unified writing system? Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I will be talking today about Mixian languages and dialects or varieties. I like to call them Mixian varieties, and we'll see in a minute why. Are spoken in Oaxaca, Mexico. There's 290 different communities, and each speaks its own variety. And many of those varieties are actually mutually unintelligible. Linguistic documentation in the area is not very pervasive. There are a few grammars and dictionaries, but hardly enough for the 290 different communities, which makes it really hard to find the right linguistic and dialectal groupings. So we don't really know which ones are dialects, which ones are their own languages, and it keeps changing over time as more documentation becomes available. Now, not knowing that, each community actually retains its own linguistic individuality. So whenever we document the language, we document it as the variety of that particular community. And unfortunately, this linguistic individuality is reflected in the different orthographies. In this talk, I'll give you a quick overview of the Mixian language family and what there is in terms of language documentation. And then I'll talk a little bit about the history of the orthographies. So what are the different orthographies out there and how did they come to be? And then I'll present a case study comparing 10 of those orthographies, and I'll show you where the differences and where the similarities lie and have a brief discussion at the end. And hopefully we'll have time for discussion as well. Well, there's 290 villages, as I mentioned. Politically, they are divided into 19 municipalities. And it is my belief that within the same municipality, those people would understand the variety of the other village because they would be neighboring villages. But if there are more distant villages in a different municipality, maybe they don't understand one another very well, or to varying degrees. Geographically, the region can be divided into lowlands, midlands, and highlands. And if you actually embark on a travel there and you leave the city of Oaxaca, you start going up the mountains, you can really see this very nicely. You go up and down and up and down the mountains. It's a very hilly area. Okay, let's look at the Mixian language family. INEA, which I like to call it, stands for Instituto Nacional para la Educación de los Adultos, which means National Institute for Adult Education. They divide the Mixian language family simply by geographic region into lowland, midland, and highland. Soren Wichmann wrote a book on historical comparison of Mixian languages. So I think his division is a little more accurate. He further divides the highland area, into North Highland and South Highland Mixian. And this is the division that I follow. The Ethnologue, which is an online source, has a division into Eastern Veracruz and Western Mixian. And basically the Ethnologue kind of bases its division on where there has been documentation done. So when new documentation becomes available, they kind of change the division into languages. So it's shifting constantly, versus Wichmann is more steady since 1995. Okay, so this gives you kind of a visual overview of the whole family, the Mixian-Sokan family, which has a Mixian branch and a Sokan branch. And I'll only be talking about one piece of the Mixian branch, which is this part up here. Okay, I will not be talking about those three languages, although there are orthographies for those languages as well. As I mentioned at the beginning, there's only a handful of dictionaries and grammars for the, if you wanted, 290 varieties, if you really count every single dialect, because each village has its own dialect. And this is what there is in terms of grammars and dictionaries so far, at least published. There may be some more in sitting some person's, I don't know, personal archive and so forth, but they're not really widely accessible. So you can see there is a little bit of documentation on each one of those varieties, so lowland, midland, and north and south highland, Miche, but there's really not that much. And two of the grammars are really very sketchy. You can also see they start in the 1800s and they go all the way to more recent times. So each Miche variety, if it has been documented, actually established its own orthographic conventions. And the efforts to create a unified writing system for all of the varieties has largely met with limited success, okay? Probably because people haven't really been collaborating. The first attempt to develop a Michean orthography dates back to 1733, when a Dominican friar started to kind of compile a little grammatical sketch, a word list, and also started to translate some religious texts. Later, the Dominicans were asked to leave the area, and their orthography was kind of forgotten. Starting in the 1950s, 60s, and later on, SIL did some documentation in the area, and they basically developed unique orthographies for each of the varieties that a particular person has been working on. And we'll see that later on as I'll get into the comparison. Akunso and others have claimed that while having different orthographies for each variety, actually what it does is to fragment the communities. Rather than to unify them, is to set them apart. And as a reaction, early on in 1979, the idea for a unified Michean orthography was proposed at a regional summit. A local task force was then created, but it was faced with great linguistic diversity, lack of resources, and local politics. Actually, Dan Soslak has a really nice article on how they keep changing the orthography in Totoltepec Miche, which is the village that he has been working with. They go back and forth and keep changing the orthography. Okay, so as a result, that kind of idea kind of got lost, the idea of a unified Michean orthography was not really successful, because each village, we didn't really know, as I mentioned at the beginning, what are varieties of the same language, what are just dialects, what are languages, and so forth. So how do you unify them under one single orthography? Now, more and more documentation has become available, and since 2005, as mentioned in Reyes Gomez, a unified orthography has actually received more support. That is because we know a little more about those languages. We know where the differences lie, and we know where the similarities lie. We may not know the variety of every single village, but we can kind of start some comparison. Its implementation has also been somehow successful because there is a middle school that actually teaches the orthography. And if you're not familiar with the school system in the Michean region or in the villages in Mexico, usually elementary school is done in the village. And then once they finish elementary school at about age either 12 or 14, they have to move on to another village if they want to continue their schooling. So that middle school actually gets students from a variety of villages, brings them all together, and they learn that unified orthography, although their variety may, you know, have a different orthography going on in the documentation. Also since 2005 and even more recently, they created local workshops for teachers. So the teachers learn the orthography, the unified orthography, and then they're able to actually pass it on to the community and have it implemented in the community. Just a little bit about my work, why am I even talking about Michean languages. I work on one of the Michean varieties. It's Chuxnaban Miche. It's a Midland Miche language. It is spoken by 900 people in San Juan Bosco, Chuxnaban. And I went in there in 2008, and I met with the local officials, asked them for permission and so forth, told them about the importance of an orthography and, you know, having their language represented in writing and so forth. and they decided, I asked them for collaborators in terms of, you know, who do you think would be a great collaborator or decider in terms of the orthography for your variety. And they decided, well, you know, we want to have that language available for the next generation, so why don't we have those young folks who come out of that middle school in that other village to actually help you with the orthography. And that's what I did. I met with those youngsters who were maybe 17, 18 years old at that time, and we developed that orthography together. We looked for phonemic orientation, so rather than having allophones represented, we wanted to have the phonemes represented, have it, you know, easy to learn, local acceptability, and also, especially those young kids now, use it on the computer, Facebook, and I see them do postings in media, which is great. So we're looking for something that they can easily reproduce on their computers. And hopefully, you know, maybe next generation on the cell phones as well. They're not there yet. This is just to give you kind of a visual of, that is the village down here, Voskočuk Samban. That is their main kind of official building. And this, I think, is from the roof of the house where I was staying. Those are the two main collaborators for the orthography, Cuauhtémoc and Salvador. And this is the mother and the daughter of the family where I was staying, Juana and Maria. So they were all very, very helpful in that whole process. Okay, so what are some of the difficulties, particularly for Mixian orthographies? The consonant phonemes across all the Mixian languages are constant, so they don't really change from one variety to another. You always have the same phonemes. So they represent maybe, you know, not that much of a challenge. But the vowels are very, very different from one variety to another. You can have up to 9 phonemic vowels, or you can have 6 phonemic vowels. And they kind of vary. You have to look at the vowel space, they may be in between, and so forth. So it's really hard to decide which vowel you want to use. Another challenge was, how much do we include Spanish in there? The young people are illiterate in Spanish, so does it really help, or would it hinder the orthography? And another process is supersegmental palatalization, which I may have to skip if we are short on time. So let's look at some of the difficulties. Well, Spanish spelling. Some of the allophones in Mixian are actually phonemes in Spanish. So, you know, those fluent Spanish speakers can actually hear them, so they know how they're pronounced. But in their language, they're not distinctive, so they don't really matter. Okay? So you would have a word like angush. So do you, you know, represent it with a K, or do you present it with a G, which is the actual pronunciation, but it's not really a phoneme. So that's one decision you have to make. Another decision is, what do you do with the initial H? Initial H is not pronounced in Spanish, but they have it in certain words, as in horn, bird. So if you spell it with an initial H, what I was getting was kind of hesitation. What is that? They don't recognize the word. It's hard for them because they're so used to seeing it written in Spanish. So they're just, you know, they're used to seeing Spanish being written, but not their own language. So they would kind of stumble upon that. So would you represent it with a J? Another phoneme that is a little tricky is K. K, K can be spelled in Spanish either as a C, as a K, or as Q. C as in casa, K as in kilo, Q, U as in queso. It's always the same sound. Okay? So what do you do with something like salt water? Canoe. Okay? If I spell it with a C initially, they may be able to, you know, read it. They may be able to read it with a K. So which one do we choose? And do we choose always the same in every single instance? Okay, let's look at the vowel qualities real quick. At least one of the vowel qualities will not be readily available on a standard keyboard. So should we use IPA symbols? Those are not readily available. Or if there is a variety that has 9 distinctive vowel qualities, should we just use the yaris, the two little dots above all the vowels that are not found on standard keyboard. But then still, if you look at the vowel space in every single variety, you may find something that can fall between two different vowels, maybe between an E or an I with the diaresis. So which one do you pick? And maybe, you know, that decision varies from village to village. You also have laryngeal features as part of the vowel nucleus, which is they have something that's called glottalized vowels, where you have a little creakiness at the end of a vowel. You can also have that creakiness in the middle of the vowel, and those are phonemically distinct. You can also have aspiration as part of the vowel, and that surface is at the end of the vowel, but it's also phonemically distinct from a plain vowel. So how do we represent those? I'm going to skip through that part just to be able to get to the comparison. How am I doing on time?
You've got 3 minutes.
Okay. So those are the 10 varieties that I compared, and I didn't want to put tables on the little PowerPoint because I thought that'd be too hard to read. So I have the entire table at the end of your handout. You can see the comparison for the consonants, and you can see the comparison for the vowels. So there is actually divergence in four different areas if you compare the 10 orthographies. So some orthographies have adopted some of the allophonic variations following Spanish. Others have not, have been more consistent. There's some divergence in terms of how do you represent the k sound, do you follow Spanish conventions or not, or how do you represent the glottal fricative. What do you do with the symbols for the less commonly found vowels? Do you use IPA? Do you use diaresis? And suprasegmental glottalization. So I'm just going to show you some of the results. Some varieties decided to adopt the Spanish spelling convention and have budugu as in Spanish. Although phonetically they're not exactly the same as in Spanish because their voice stops, and in Spanish you sometimes have them as more voiced fricatives intervocalically. Largely for the h sound, they do follow Spanish spelling conventions. And for the vowel quality, you also see some divergence. Some use diaresis, some use underlining, which may be an easy way to represent special vowels on the keyboard, and some decided to use IPA symbols. And if you actually look at the table, you can really see the comparison. I'm going to skip through suprasegmental palatalization just to talk a little bit about the uniform orthographies that have been developed for all Mijen languages. And on the table, those are the one developed by the Instituto Nacional, the National Institute for Adult Education, and also Reyes Gomez, who is an advocate for Mijen language documentation revitalization, and goes into the villages to actually teach the orthography. So what do they have in common? They try to avoid representing the allophones, just to be more consistent within the language. For palatalization, we haven't talked about that. They just use the palatal glide, and none of the orthographies that are uniform uses the glottal fricative H to represent the glottal fricatives. They prefer to use J in order to avoid any confusion with those Spanish literates. For glottalization, they use apostrophe, which seems fairly simple. And for the additional vowel qualities that are not readily available on keyboards, they use the diaresis for all the vowels. But they kind of diverge in which vowels they represent with which symbol. So while the National Institute has both E and I with the diaresis, Reyes only uses the E with the diaresis, including kind of a larger vowel space. So they both show consistency by being phonemic and by preferring symbols that are easily available on keyboards, which can help the learnability, it can contribute to its ease of use, and ultimately contribute to its widespread use. And I'm just going to jump to conclusions here. I think I'm out of time. Well, this talk is about showing how it can be very difficult to design a uniform spelling system when you're working in an area that is linguistically very diverse and where language documentation has basically only started, so there's a lot that you're still missing that you don't know about the whole language family. And in general, if you have kind of this individuality going on in the villages, and each village wants to retain its own orthography, it is really hard to go into the villages and promote a uniform orthography. So this work actually highlights the complexity of orthography design in a region with limited intellectual and economic resources to unify local communities and to ensure widespread impact. And social, political, and cultural acceptability represents a key factor in the sustainability of an orthography, which ultimately contributes to the success or failure of language documentation and revitalization efforts. Yes, Kuhui.
Thank you.
So I'd like to invite questions.
Make a few more comments about this old French linguist called Aude de Lacasserie, 1898, who was, I think, famous for taking old grammars of old Mexican missionary or Spanish missionary grammar.
It is just a reprint of De Quintana, so it's just a reprint of an older orthography from the Dominicans who went in there.
I see.
So it's not like his own.
And
did he
do a good job? Because De Lacasserie, I don't know if you know, was famous for really being a slob, reproducing.
No, I didn't
things.
Know, but no.
But yeah,
in terms of the orthographic representation,
yeah.
No, not really.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. No, I didn't know that. That's interesting. I would like to know if you have any sources on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'll give you the references about that. Yeah.
Yes, please.
So there's a lot. It appears there's a lot of variation in how the vowels are pronounced,
mm-hmm.
Is that right?
No, it is
in
how the vowels,
are,
so for example, you have a word that the consonants would be the same for almost all varieties, but then the vowel would change.
Yeah.
And if you have that, you know, across a series of words and sentences, especially in the verbs, it makes it really hard to understand the other variety, even though, you know, the consonants are the same. Yeah. I'm
but
sorry,
the number
was that
of phonemes is different, right?
The number of phonemes, yeah. So they're not all phonemically distinct in all varieties. And there's actually also some interdialectal borrowing. So you have maybe some words that are pronounced in the village that I work with. There's some words where you do have a slight distinction, but it doesn't matter how you pronounce it. And that same vowel may be phonemically distinct in a different variety. So all that really plays in to the fact, what do you represent and when does it become phonemic?
Yeah, and what is the implication for a standard, if you're going to standardize the orthography, does that mean you're standardizing to a particular dialect or to an amalgamation of all the dialects?
Well, what they do is you have a symbol for every single vowel that is possible. Whether you choose to represent it in that variety, whether it's phonemically relevant or not, that then depends on, I guess, the person who documents that language or variety.
So I'm interested if you could maybe contrast that with what you think of this orthographic system in, say, English, given different dialects that have such varying pronunciations of vowels.
Yeah, well, I'm not a native English speaker, so I never went through that grueling task at school to actually learn how to spell and pronounce, and you probably noticed my vowels are a little off, I guess, when I speak. Yeah, I don't know.
But
don't
you know, it allows people who speak British English and American English and Australian English and New Zealand
right.
English to all read the exact same language
right.
while the pronunciations are different.
Right, but phonemically,
so
I guess they're
the
not distinct.
What, the situation.
I guess they're not distinct phonemically in English in any of the words, so you don't have really a distinction that I would know of.
They are
distinct. Oh, they are.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, they are? Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I think, yes, please.
Two things. First of all, a question. My understanding from your presentation is that nobody is suggesting that they write all of the languages, all of the varieties, okay, given that they have, let's say, a word,
mm-hmm.
I don't my understanding is
no,
that nobody's suggesting
they would write
that
same word.
Write that same word the same way.
No.
They would write
no.
it according to how it's pronounced.
Exactly.
It's just that
in
it's
their
the same
village.
Sound, they would use the same they would use the same grapheme for the same sound.
Exactly.
But then they would spell it according to how it's actually pronounced.
Exactly. And then it's some variety, it may actually be phonemically different. The vowel that they're
right.
using in others,
right.
it may just be a slight variation.
Okay, so thanks for that clarification.
Yes, absolutely. No, that wouldn't make sense.
My, well, okay.
Because
that,
they wouldn't know which one would be picked.
That's exactly what we do in English, though.
Yeah. I know,
and
yeah, which one would you pick?
Just here. But I guess from my experiences in Turkic languages,
mm-hmm.
I guess I'm very skeptical of the possibility of uniting these, and it's
mm-hmm.
precisely because of the second point in your conclusions, where you state that Mithan communities prefer dialectal particularity
yes.
over multi-dialectal uniformity, which is exactly
yes.
what we see. I mean, there were all kinds of pan-Turkic discussions, but when you came right down to it, Turkmenistan wanted Turkmen to look different, and Uzbek
mm-hmm.
wanted Uzbek to look different, and Azerbaijan.
Yes.
Now, Azerbaijan wanted theirs to look like Turkey, but it was political.
Yes.
Sure.
Political purposes said we want it to look like Turkey, and so they borrowed absolutely. But the interesting thing about Azerbaijani is that their one symbol that everybody points to there is the A, which isn't in Turkish, and they can all say, ah, see, so we're different too. So I guess I'm really, really, really skeptical of the possibility.
Yeah, I guess what, you know, more resources and having more schools opening where the next generation kind of learns the way of writing, because I've seen that. We started out with a slightly different orthography, and then I worked with the two young people who came out of that school, and they wanted a change. So they wanted to change that according to what they have learned in the school. So, I don't know, it may be a matter of getting used to an orthography, and once you have a few people that are used to an orthography, you may increase acceptability of that. I don't know, it may be different from village to village as well.
I have one quick question here that Sam asked.
It was a great presentation. One of the most interesting parts I found was empowering children to be involved in the development of the norm. Now, there's an important consideration, and that is that they've all been schooled first in Spanish.
Yes.
And so part of what's happening is that the imposition of a foreign orthography that represents different kinds of contrast can end up introducing irregularities that in the long run make the writing system less representative
yes,
of the language. Now, considering the variation, maybe that's not a problem. But I've seen that in my own work where by asking children to write after having been imparted literacy entirely in Spanish for years, and of course they resort entirely to Spanish in order to represent the phonology of their language.
Yeah, well, orthography isn't something, I mean, language you can pick up as a child, but you know, a writing system is something that you actually have to learn. So you have to go to school or you have to learn it somehow. It's not something that you pick up. So once you learn something, I guess it's so much in your head that it's really hard to learn something new if you can use what you already have to represent the language. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, that the schooling is in Spanish in the villages. It's only in that middle school where you have a little bit of that mije coming in where they, you know, learn a little bit about the culture. So yeah, the Spanish influence, it'll be really hard to get rid of it.
We have to actually finish now. I'm sure that Carmen would love to speak more with you about that after the talk. So let's thank our speaker.
Thank you so much.
Well done, Carmen. That's great.